Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Joining me today is former Caracas FC and Venezuela international midfielder, Kat Shepherd. Kat, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me again. Doing great. It's a beautiful day over here in Madrid.
So we first spoke about a year ago now and have probably spoken by one means or another pretty much every day. It's crazy how these things happen. I was put in contact with Kat through Jennifer Socorro, a former teammate of Kat's at Caracas and the youth national team, and a film director who directed the film They Call Us Warriors, which followed the Venezuela under-17s at the 2016 World Cup. Kat, Jennifer introduced me to you to show the contrast between the changing fortunes of the Venezuelan football scene for the girls between your generation and the generation that we know today of Dana Castellanos and Veronica Herrera. You came through the Caracas youth setup, you played with the senior national teams, and then you made the step into America. It's an identical pathway to the one that Veronica Herrera made, and a very similar one to Dana Castellanos, with the only exception being that she didn't play for Caracas. Yet your stories are so different. Yeah. Start us by telling us your pathway into football and those early years in your career.
Well, I started playing, I remember since I was little, I liked all kinds of sports. I actually liked basketball the most, which is funny. I tried it, but there were no girls teams for basketball in my school. So I had to play with the boys. And I remember so clearly the first game that we had, I was going to shoot the ball. And it got blocked so bad because, I mean, I was very short and stuff. So I was like, I don't think this is for me. I mean, I still like basketball, but not to like play competitively, of course. Then I found a team, a girls team, and I started playing there, and I just fell in love with it. And from playing there, I actually switched teams, and I played in EA's team, in Andrea Tovar's team, in her school. And that's where I met her, actually. And that was where I don't remember exactly how, but I got connected to Enzo Tropiano. And that's when he invited me to go play at Caracas. And that's when I started playing in Caracas Football Club in a more organized and more formal team and at a higher level.
And what age were you at this point? Because you went into professional football, or the closest thing they had to professional football in the women's game at the time. But you were young, weren't you?
Yeah. When I arrived to Caracas, I was 15.
And then you won the league with them in 2009, which would have made you... How old were you in 2009?
In 2009, I had just graduated high school, so I was 17, going on 18, yeah.
And that was the season that was, if you wrote an autobiography when you were like 40 and you'd had a long professional career, that's the year where people would look back and go, that was the beginning of Kat Shepherd. In 2009, you'd won the league with Caracas FC, you'd competed in the Copa Libertadores, and you'd just broken into the senior national team of Venezuela, where you won gold, silver, and bronze. 2009 yeah. was the year of Kat Shepherd.
That was the best one. We also won Copa Venezuela, and that was actually my last game with Caracas Football Club. And yeah, that was like the best year ever. And I also got the opportunity to dedicate only to football, because when I graduated high school in June 2009, and then I didn't start university until January of 2010. So I dedicated solely to football and traveling and stuff for like 6 months. And I don't know, it was awesome. I accomplished a lot of things in that year.
Yeah, and it would be unfair and wrong to say, well, what went wrong? Because nothing went wrong, but things changed. And today, that wouldn't happen. Why do you think the move to America, the move to study in America as well, meant the end of your football career? Because that's essentially what happened in terms of like your trajectory into the professional game.
Yeah, I mean, that when I moved to the United States, I think that like you said, it's not a problem or anything, but when I moved to the US, I didn't have a solid plan, so to speak, as far as where I was going to play, what university I was going to go. I had it 100% clear that I wanted to find an athletic scholarship to play in a university, but I did not know the procedures to follow or how hard that could be. So by the time December 2009 came, that we had made all the plans to move and everything. And when I say we, I mean me and my parents. I still didn't have any solid plans or any solid like a university to go to or a scholarship. I tried emailing a lot of coaches on my own and everything, but it's just really hard and it's very, very competitive. I also didn't have guidance on how it worked. So I arrived there and I spent about a year in a community college, just playing club football, not in a very competitive setting, training on my own. I still had the ambition, especially the first 6 months, I still had the ambition to go to the national team. There was actually going to be an under 20 Sudamericano in Colombia, I think, the first trimester of 2010 that I really wanted to go to. But yeah, I didn't have the opportunity to go. And then I think that year, that gap year, so to speak, as far as football, kind of affected me in that sense. And then, well, I had the opportunity. I was lucky enough to get help and get offered a scholarship at the end of the day. And that's when I kind of regained my competitive football trajectory. Yeah.
So today, the biggest difference is you've told me about before, between your trajectory and the trajectory of girls like Veronica Herrera and Dana Castellanos, who left Venezuela for the US at a similar age, and have a very different outlook for the rest of their career to what transpired with yours. You said that a lot of the difference was the organization of football in Venezuela at the time for the women, the professionality of it, and the resources. When you were that age and you'd achieved what you'd achieved with Caracas and the national team, to move to America and see your career sort of come to an end, like in front of your eyes, very, very suddenly with no real explanation, must have been hard, because it was something you'd worked for. It was a career you needed. How did you refocus yourself? How did you realign what you wanted from your life? Because football was such a big part of it for years. You'd represented your country, your city, the capital of Venezuela.
That's actually a really good question. It was not easy at all. Like I said, like the first 6 months or so, I still had the hopes, and when I kind of had to adapt it, I how I did it, but it was hard trying to adapt to the new country I was living in, and even though I spoke the language, it's not the same, you know. So I was adapting to all of those things, and also just it was a period where I had to just focus on what I had in front of me. And I said, you know, most likely I'm not going to get the chance to go back to the national team or to a competitive to competitive football like I was before being here. And so I just had to focus on what's in front of me, and I focused on getting that scholarship and on doing my best those 4 years of competition that I had. In that moment, I don't think there was any other player that was playing in the collegiate league in the United States that was also getting called to the national team or to any other international or relevant competitions. So since there was no precedent, I was like, you know, this is not gonna happen most likely. So I'm just going to focus on these 4 years, give it my all, do my best here, and then see what happens. But it was pretty tough.
And do you think the main reason for things like breaking down with the national team was purely because you were now overseas in America and like the finances involved in calling you up and flying you to camps? Do you think that was a big contributing factor?
I think so, yeah. In that moment, I don't think that there was an important investment into the women's national team, at least enough, not enough to invest in paying for flights and stuff like that. Nevertheless, I still had I wanted to go, and I would have paid for it myself if I had to. I mean, obviously it's easier said than done, but I would have done my absolute best. I just didn't see the interest in whoever makes the decision to call a player. And so there came a point where, you know, I kind of stopped trying, you know, because there's also like, there's a level of interest that you have to show a player. If a player plays overseas, you have to, you know, keep the communication lines open, see how they're doing. I feel like that communication and that interest just kind of disappeared, I guess.
And you mentioned the sacrifice there that, you know, you would have made had you continued to receive the call-ups in paying for your own flights. And to be honest, that wasn't an anomaly. That was something that you and others were used to doing. It really struck me when I interviewed you for the book. You told me about one experience of traveling to a tournament in Colombia, the Feria de las Flores, and your mm-hmm. journey with Jose Catoya across Venezuela by bus. Tell us more about that, because that is not what people think of when they think of national teams traveling to international tournaments.
Yeah, that was one crazy experience. So I had just graduated high school there. It was in summer 2009. The rest of the team traveled before, but I stayed behind along with another teammate, Anabel Guzman. If I remember correctly, she was also staying behind because she was also finishing her studies and graduating. So we both stayed behind a few more days to attend our graduation and stuff. And Jose Catoya stayed also to, after that, travel with us. We traveled by bus from Caracas to, I think, San Cristobal. After that, we crossed the border. We took another bus to the border with Colombia. And mind you, this was like a straight like travel. We did not spend the night in anywhere, in any hotel.
Yeah, that's like a 12 to 13 hour drive from Caracas to San Cristobal.
It was brutal. Yeah, so when we got to the border, I mean, it was daytime, thank God. There were a group of people protesting. I don't even remember why, but they had the street was blocked with tires on fire, and so we saw that, and we were like, "There is no way! Like, how are we gonna do this?" But then when we got closer, we saw there was an opening like right in the middle of it. And like there was an opening so like people could go through. And I actually have a picture of this. I took a picture with my BlackBerry. I remember, and so it's somewhere. But yeah, we were like, we have to cross, like there's no other option. And then yeah, I remember just running through the opening with the flaming tires with my bags, with my suitcase, and it was crazy. And then we got in another bus, and then we traveled to Medellin. And we got there late, and then the next day I started getting sick, and I had earache, really bad earache, and I don't know, it was brutal. But then the next day you get there, you put your national team jersey on, and you forget about everything else and just play. And yeah, so I would do it again if it was because of that, honestly.
So it was an international footballer who'd won the league with Caracas, who plays in the Libertadores, took a 13-hour bus drive across Venezuela and then had to cross the border on foot past burning tires. That is what the
It's
reality was then.
true.
That's crazy. And that year you also played in Bolivia in the Bolivarian Games, which was actually where your international career, not that you knew it, would come to an end. You played your last game for Venezuela in there. Yeah, in the tournament. What do you remember from your experiences representing the national team overseas? Because you played in, if I remember rightly, you played for Venezuela and Colombia, in Bolivia, and in Cuba.
And Chile. Yeah, Cuba, Chile, and Puerto Rico. Yeah.
Excellent. And what do you remember about the logistics of traveling with the national team, the experiences of representing your country overseas?
I had a few experiences. We traveled to Puerto Rico for the Interscholastic Games, to Chile, Bolivia. We stayed in a military base in Santurce. That was the name of the city. And it was the format, it was kind of like Olympic Games. Each country had their own building for a bunch of sports. And it was like, we were like on the second floor, and there were two big rooms with like five bunk beds in each room, connected by the bathroom in the middle with like kind of like dressing room showers and stuff. It was kind of weird but unique. It was really fun. We even went for a reggaeton singer. It was really fun. It was mostly preparation for the 2008 Sudamericano in Chile. It was one of the first modules, and not all of the people that went to Puerto Rico went to Chile. The Sudamericano in Chile was the first experience where I felt like it was a big deal. Like I was an important football player. Like it was really great. The organization and stuff, the facilities where we trained, where we played. It did not have like as much media attention as it can have now. I actually have very few pictures from that Sudamericano, but I felt good. And even before one of the modules for that Sudamericano, it wasn't outside of Venezuela, but we went to Barquisimeto. We also went to Caulare, and we trained in the Estadio Metropolitano de Lara. And in that moment, they were building it. It was almost done, but they were building it for the Copa America. And it was the first ever experience I had playing in like professional quality grass. We're stepping on the grass for that stadium, which is pretty big. And the first thing I did was touch the grass, and it was amazing because in Caracas we used to play in artificial turf, and sometimes we went and played in dirt fields. And when we practiced in that, it was amazing. Then the other experiences we had traveling well, when we went to Bolivia, we also played in a big stadium. We stayed in a hotel. It was, as time passed, I did notice that the quality of the accommodations and the travel arrangements and everything got a little better. except for that experience going to Colombia. But that was something I think I would like to think was a little bit out of the ordinary, because we didn't go with the rest of the team. But overall, it, you know, all of those little, well, not little, but all of those details that if the players went through some of those things and that are not very high quality right now, obviously they would complain with all of their yeah, they had all the right to complain, because it some of the things weren't right. But I think that when I used to play in the national team, me and all of my teammates in that moment, we just wanted to play. We just wanted to put on the vino tinto and play. And a lot of the times we put up with things that weren't necessarily, you know, very, very good. But other than that, I remember all of those experiences, great joy and love.
And in terms of like physical mementos of your time representing Venezuela, like is there anything you still have today that you keep as a like a cherished item, maybe one of your jerseys or anything like that?
Yeah, well, back then we didn't get a lot of gear from when we went to like the modules and practice. We actually didn't keep anything. They didn't let us keep anything. It was hand-me-downs from I guess men's teams and stuff. So we like it was recycled a lot of times. But I do have the jersey I played with in the Sudamericano in Chile. And I have that. I have the jersey, the vino tinto jersey, the shorts and the socks. They didn't let us keep the white jerseys that we used to play like the away jerseys. And other than that, I do have medals and player passes, those little badges that they give people when they go places. I have the one for Copa Libertadores. I have the one for the Sudamericano. I have some medals. Those are mostly the items that I keep as memories of that.
And they're going to be like great memories for the rest of your life. But in 10, 20, 30 years time, from the players and coaches that I've spoken to, they will still look back at your generation and say that is when things began to change for Venezuelan football and the women's national teams. A year after you went to the USA in 2010 was the first major participation for the women's team at a Youth World Cup. And things from there just seem to go on a continuous upwards trajectory, to the point at which we now have Dana Castellanos scoring with aplomb and regularity for Atletico Madrid in La Liga, having joined this time last year, just won the Supercopa there. You have Veronica Herrera in her last year of study in the US. And then you have some players that from your generation who took a long winding path to where they are now deservedly in Europe, doing really well. Two of your closest friends, Andrea Tova and Oriana Altuve. Tell us what it was like to play with them and why. I know it's no surprise to you that they are where they are now.
Well, playing with them was amazing. The type of person that I've always been, the type of teammate, I've always had really close relationships with my teammates. But you know, we had, and we still have a very, very good friendship that has lasted for years, regardless of the distance. And looking back to the times where we played in Caracas and the national team and where they are now, I believe that, you know, them staying in Venezuela and living through that progress in Venezuela was the thing that gave them the tools to continue with their professional football career, because they were two of the several players that ended up going to Colombia, to Brazil, and to other countries in South America to play. when women's football started to develop a little more. And so, you know, the domestic league started to stronger and stronger. More teams started to participate. And you can also see it in, like, for example, the high performance training facility that they created, the Senar in Yaracuy in 2019, and other things that helped them develop. Also, they continued to play at a high level, and going to other countries gave them a lot of maturity as football players to develop. And so I think that was key, you know, going from Venezuela to another country to play.
And in a roundabout way, you've all found each other again, and you're all back together in Spain, having taken very different routes to where you are now. Ori Altuve is at Real Betis on the back of a fantastic 2020 with Rayo Vallecano. She won the Iberoamericana Player of the Year award. She was top scorer at the Copa Andalucía. She finished third in Venezuela's Athlete of the Year, the highest placed footballer that there was. So she's had a fantastic individual couple of years. Ea Tovar is at Getafe, an exciting new project in women's football in Spain. And you yourself, you're still playing, but more focused on coaching and helping players that were in a similar position to you 10 years ago to have better opportunities. Tell us more about that, what you're doing now, why you're so inspired to do the role that you do now.
Yeah, so, well, as a player, I even though I stopped playing competitively after college, I never actually stopped playing. I always continued to play at some level. And so coming to Spain, moving to Spain, gave me the opportunity to go back to playing at a decent level. And that's what I'm doing now. I play for Mostoles or RJC in the south of Madrid. That would be like the year of football here. As far as my professional work, I was coaching in Jefe, same team as Andrea. And I also work at a company, it's called Global College USA, which from any country really, get athletic and academic scholarships in the USA, which, you know, it, looking back, now that I know how it works, it's not so easy. There's a lot of guidance that we do to players and families and open those doors for them. And I also, I'm also the international team Soccer Spain, which is an international soccer, or football academy with headquarters in Madrid that offers players and other consulting services to coaches and clubs. And so my role there is develop the international involvement of the academy and also developing the women's football side of the academy, which I'm really, really excited about.
And the common denominator with yourself, with Ori and Aya, was a coach that if you talk to anyone about women's football in Venezuela, knows the name of and has something to say. Enzo Tropiano at Caracas. Why is Enzo such an influential figure in the women's game in Venezuela? And B, why is he such a character? Everyone's got something to say about Enzo.
Yeah, Enzo, honestly, he in my football career, if you ask me who has been my biggest influence and mentor, I would say him. He took a chance on me and a few other players when we were 15 and playing in different parts. He took a chance on us and recruited us to play in Caracas and gave us the opportunity to play in the Liga Nacional in that moment, which was mostly made up of adult players. And we were under 17, you know? And, you know, he took a chance on us and gave us the opportunity. That was, I think, critical in, at least in my development as a player. Gave me a lot of maturity, a lot of experiences. And that, I think, I attribute to, you know, it opened the doors for me to play for my state and for my country. The people that know him and the players that have had the opportunity to be under his leadership know that always looked to help and to do things the best possible way. That was so important, and I'm sure it still is really important to him, doing things the right way, being honest, having discipline, being straightforward. Like he didn't only teach me a lot about football, he taught me a lot about being a good person, a good player outside of the field. He taught us a lot of values that still carry on to today. And if you talk to, like I'm telling you, if you talk to Ori, if you talk to Ea, they will tell you the same. And all of those values have helped them get to where they are now, because it's not only about the talent that you might have inside the field, it's also about the discipline and the demeanor that you have when you are outside of the field. He has a very unique personality, but he is such a good person, and I consider myself really lucky to have had the opportunity to be under his leadership.
Yeah, I think one way I've had his coaching style or a running theme in his coaching style described to me as is tough love. Did you ever experience tough love coaching from Enzo?
Definitely, I did. You know, that tough love coaching, I like that term. And a lot of the times he did that to all of us. He showed that tough love coaching with absolutely everyone in the team. Doesn't matter who, doesn't matter how good you were, it doesn't matter. And that's something that I always also I liked about that, because not always you see coaches treating players in the same manner, you know. I remember one day I was having a really tough game. In my position, I was playing in the midfield, and you know, if you lose a ball there, it can be very bad. And it just wasn't my day. He said, "Go home." Like, he basically kicked me out of the facility. Yeah, but then after that, he talked to me, and he said that it was just like he knows that I could do better and all of these things. The players that stuck with him, and we developed a very strong side. Psychologically speaking, I guess. But yeah, and like that, there's a lot of stories that we can tell about him, but we have very high regards for him, for sure.
So using that example with him like telling you to go home, do you think that was like, is that because like he had a short temper, or it was him trying to deliver some kind of message to you to reflect? Like what do you think his like mindset behind telling you to like go home off the back of a bad performance was?
I think it might have been a mix of both. He does have I don't know about now, but he did have a short temper for sure. I think it could be a mix of both. I also remember in Copa Libertadores when we were playing, I don't exactly remember who we were playing, but I started that game, and I had started the first game against Everton. And I think I played really well. And then the second game, I started it. And then 15 minutes later, he took me out of the game.
And 15 minutes into the first half?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I just wasn't, you know, I wasn't playing super bad, but I wasn't doing spectacular. But, you know, 15 minutes is very short time to make a decision like that. But, you know, things like that, kind of makes you think like, yes, he does have a short temper, and that could have played a part in those types of decisions. But also you know, if you look at it from the perspective of being like, hey, you know, you are in a Copa Libertadores, the magnitude of this tournament is big. It wasn't just Libertadores, it was the first Copa Libertadores. A lot of attention was being paid on that tournament. And if he sees that you're not in the game or you can't deliver what you're supposed to deliver, then you're gonna have to step aside and let someone else try it. And a lot of the times in life, that's definitely true. And even though it sucked, it's, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes it's gonna happen. So I don't know. I think a lot of the things that some people might regard as drastic or crazy, and sometimes they might have been, but they definitely taught a lesson, and they still stick with me for sure.
Yeah, and Enzo is like a mainstay in Venezuelan football. He's still there now, very pivotal role. Could potentially be leading out the women's team in the short tournament that's coming up to try and get 2020 season finish. Well, didn't even start, but try and squeeze in a tournament in order to decide who qualifies for the continental tournaments. And Enzo looks set to lead out Caracas. So he's a mainstay in the scene. And he's always had his players' backs, like you said. I remember Andrea Tova telling us about a falling out in the national team. And it was Enzo at Caracas that had his players' back. Are you able to give us some insight into that scenario and how that illustrates maybe Caracas as a professional institution in Venezuelan football?
Yeah, there were some issues in the national team. He always instilled in us and his players being professional out of the field as well. That means being on time. Like he said, if you're not 10 minutes early, you're not on time, you're late, you know, and things like that. Because hard work in all senses is what is going to take you to the next level. His players always were a reflection of that, you know, not only when they were playing in Caracas, but also when they're in a national team. I speak for myself also when I had the opportunity to participate in other teams as well. And when they saw those, that professionalism wasn't being taken into consideration and wasn't being, you know, respected, they communicated that to Enzo, and they decided to leave the module. And he had their backs. He helped them get the transportation needed to go back when the federation threatened to them or take not punishment, but it kind of legal procedure about it. Then he had their backs as well. He defended them, and he was willing to do anything to have their backs. And so that's definitely one example of how he has his players. He always helped with anything at all. Like when I was there, you needed a ride home, he would take you. Anything you needed, you could go to him, and he would help in any way he could.
That's incredible. And you need characters like that in every walk of life, especially one that was getting so little attention and whose development has been slow. But I know that you believe now, 10 years, just over 10 years on from your move from Venezuela to the US, that women's football in Venezuela and the national team is in a much stronger place. Where do you think the women's team on the national stage can go in the next couple of years? And why do you think this progress has been achieved? How do you think this progress has been achieved?
Well, first of all, I need to start answering this question by saying that even though there has been a lot of progress from the moment when I used to play, there is still so much work that needs to be done.
Yeah.
But having said that, I believe that all of the progress that has been made has been amazing. And, you know, you don't have to look any further than the results that the women's teams have had in all of their age groups. You have to attribute that growth in the national team to the development of the of women's football at the domestic level in terms of new teams being created, girls being interested in playing from a very young age, you know, because when I used to play and I was in high school, I don't think I didn't start playing football when I was younger than that, because there weren't teams around for me to play. But now there are. So, and also girls see Deina Castellanos, Oriana Altuve, and all of these girls that are playing abroad. A 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old sees them in the TV and the news, and they're like, hey, I want to play. And so they're not scared to go and play with boys if need be. And so those are things that didn't happen as much before. As years go by, that's definitely something that contributes to that. I mean, it's the base. Those are the girls that in the future are going to be the ones in the teams, in the national teams. In the next few years, I believe that there is so much potential. All these generations, the under 17s and under 20s, are going to feed the senior team of freshness and new talent. There is a lot of talent in the senior team already, of course, but it's such a competitive age group because you are competing against the best of the best in other countries. And I'm talking about South American, you know, in the South American level.
Yeah.
Classifying for a World Cup is so hard, especially because also it's funny because I feel like we always get Brazil or Argentina in our group. On the other side, that's a great challenge. That's the level that we have to shoot for. And I think that we're capable of achieving it in the medium term if the federation and you know, I believe that there has to be a women's football strategy in the federation that is in place for everything else to fall into place, you know? And actually a lot of federations are doing that right now, putting women's football departments and women's football strategies. The other day I was reading the women's football strategy for the FA, and I thought it was really, really interesting how they plan everything from grassroots to like the senior team. And there's a pathway, you know, there's a pathway that the girls can follow, and it doesn't matter, you know, where they live or their economic circumstances, they have access to a football team, you know, they have access to competing and participating. And so that's so important. And that's something that I think I would say is the key for Venezuelan women's football to develop in the medium term, is developing a women's football strategy that pans everything out and actually having people to commit to it. And I know that the situation that the country is going through makes things harder, but I think that a strategy can be put in place, taking those things into consideration to at least make things a little better.
Yeah, and I think there's probably two more points that we should discuss. And I think firstly, in a roundabout way, yet again, albeit in a different role, you found yourself at the forefront of Venezuelan football again. And what I mean by that is you're in Spain as a coach, and a lot of Venezuela's best players are now in Spain. It's one of the most represented foreign countries in Spanish football. And the players there from Venezuela, obviously the standout names at the moment being Deina Castellanos and Oriana Altuve, are doing really, really well. How much pride does that bring you to see, especially like players that you were playing with and winning trophies with Caracas and Venezuela like 10 years ago?
Definitely, because it's something that when I used to play there, with some of them, we didn't see it as something that was possible, you know? When we played there, you know, we didn't see women's football on the TV or barely on newspapers sometimes. Like, we didn't think that this was possible. Seeing it happen and me seeing some of them be protagonists in it, it just fills me with so much pride. I just want to, from the position that I'm in right now, I want to be a part of it. You know, obviously not as a player anymore, but as an agent of change, helping them and the future ones, the young ones, to have the same opportunities and even more opportunities, open more doors for the ones that are coming behind them, to have the same chance to achieve that and more. You know, they are doing that, breaking barriers in the field, playing for Spanish teams and playing abroad. And my intention is to do the same from outside the field. And I think that if we work together, and we can achieve a lot for the future generations.
I'm back home in Venezuela. One of the biggest changes since you left and today is, at least in name and ambition, is the introduction of a fully professional women's league. You know, having been in the meeting in 2020 between the union, the players' union, and the players, that there's a lot of progress to be made for that league to really deserve the status of being professional. From that meeting, from knowing players that are still playing there and having colleagues in the federation and the league set up, what would you say are like the three main issues that still need to be addressed to make the league worthy of being called professional?
Well, I think the first one, it all has to start with professionalism and seriousness and continuity from the federation into developing the league. You know, they have to be constant as far as enforcing the rules and promoting women's teams in their clubs, you know. Then I think that the other big issue is creating an environment in which players feel safe and players, you know, feel like they can speak their minds. Because in, like, for example, in this meeting that we were talking about, a lot of players were expressing how they were, you know, there was fear if they spoke out about their situations, you know. And with these situations, I mean, they haven't been paid for a while, their contract terms have not been respected, etc. And so I think that an environment, a better environment, has to be created between players and clubs in order to progress.
Yeah, we had in that meeting, players say they'd been told by members of the club, like in management roles, that, you know, they only had a women's team out of commable obligation. That we heard from the union itself that a lot of these players didn't have contracts with their clubs. They had nothing more than an agreement, which, you know, mm-hmm. is something the union can't enforce because it's not a legally binding football contract. And they're the things that are plaguing some teams in particular.
Yeah. So and that takes me to that third issue that I think is really big, and it's just a social, the social issue of people not respecting women's football as they should, and owners and stuff like that. Because I mean, of course, CONMEBOL kind of tells them you have to have a women's team in order to participate in continental competitions, and they're like, okay, but they have to have it, but they don't want to have it. And I mean, it's hard to make someone want something that they don't want, but that's where the federation has to come in and society has to come in and like look at women's football as an asset, not as an obligation. I think that when we get to that point, things are going to be so much better. Of course, it's a long road and it's a long process, but that social aspect is definitely an important part. And I think the national team can play a big role in that social perspective transformation.
I completely agree. And it's an area that needs needs to harness the popularity of the sport as well, because we saw with Jennifer Socorro's film, They Call Us Warriors, about the youth team at the World Cup, we saw how captivated the entire country became with not just a youth team, which is rare, but a women's youth team, which is even rarer. And that captivated the entire nation. You know, at the end of the day, football, as soon as you're onto the pitch, is just 11 people against 11 people representing a country. And I think that's why it's such a powerful tool in society as well as in the sphere of sport.
Definitely. And I think that women's football has something really special, and that's the values that it represents, because it represents values of resilience and the fact that we, like, historically, women's football has come from a place of discrimination. And, you know, women's football and in a lot of countries and places, women overall. And so it represents values that people can identify with. And those things are able to change people's perspectives and have people identify with that. And I think there's so much potential in that sense as well. We just need to create the environment and programs and initiatives that touch a little bit of each aspect and just grow from there.
Kat, thank you very, very much for coming on today. It was a pleasure to hear the stories that you had with your time of Caracas with Venezuela. And like Alan Hrastaviak said to me, a Venezuelan football publicist, when I first spoke to him about you, he said it was a shame that more people don't know who you are and what you did for your country when you were a player, and that you're a name that deserves to be known. So thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for all that you do for Venezuelan football and for being a part of the English team.
Thank you so much. And those words are really touching. But like me, there's so many other names that did so much for the national team, even generations before me. There's a lot of stories that haven't been told that are worth telling, for sure. And yeah, thank you for giving women's football and Venezuelan women's football an outlet and an opportunity to tell those stories. So yeah, I'm honored. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. And thank you to everyone listening to this week's episode of the Footvay English podcast. See you soon.